Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, November 20th, 2014. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, the second of a two-parter with mad fermentationist Michael Tonsmeyer. This week, Mike shares some beers that he classifies as weird fermentations. One of those is a beer fermented with critters that Mike collected in and around his Washington, D.C. home. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on Google Plus as well. And thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who has done so already. And people are ordering our new Jumbo Combo from our website. Now, this combo has all four of our DVDs, our logbook, and our bottle opener, all at one low holiday special, limited time price. If you already have all that stuff, the Jumbo Combo makes a great gift for a new brewer or someone you think needs to get into the hobby. Check that out at basicbrewingshop.com. And logbook users, it's time to get a new logbook for 2015. Start the year fresh with a new book. Well, let's look into the mailbag for an appropriately themed question. Jonathan from Rockland, California writes, "Every time I hear the Mad Fermentationist on your podcast, I get rather excited." Me too. Jonathan says, "Although I keep hearing him mention his lambic that's in its early stages had a tropical Hefeweizen character. My question is, would there be any way to stabilize the brew at that point, such as cold crashing, then bottling, or pasteurizing, though I'd be worried about destroying esters and phenols?" Well, I shared this question with Mike, and he responded, "Yep, cold crashing and holding in the 30s would buy you some time, but esters will break down on their own, which is why Hefeweizen ages so poorly. You'd have to taste the beer regularly, then keg when it got the desired profile. Filtration or chemical pasteurization would be options as well, but would change the flavor more." So there you go. If you have a funky beer that's evolving and you want to freeze it in time, so to speak, not literally freeze it, cold crashing and holding in the 30s might elongate that. There you go. Oh, well, I'm thinking about it. We are going to take next week off for the Thanksgiving holiday. I'm going to be with my family, and I hope you will be too. Even if you're not in the United States, take some time with those you love and eat some good food and lie back on the couch and regret eating all the good food. It's what I do. Steve and I are planning to shoot a Basic Brewing video episode this week, so be on the lookout for that. We have a sponsor this week. Looking for the perfect holiday gift idea? Search no further. An American Homebrewers Association gift membership is the perfect stocking stuffer for homebrewers and craft beer enthusiasts. Purchase an AHA gift card before December 12th, 2014, and receive a free gift. Choose from the following brewers' publication titles: IPA by Mitch Steele, Designing Great Beers by Ray Daniels, and Radical Brewing by Randy Mosher. Visit homebrewersassociation.org/give and give the gift of beer. That's homebrewersassociation.org/give. Very good. Okay, let's get into the second half of our evening with Mike Tonsmeyer. Mike Tonsmeyer, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
It was hard to, you know, carve time out of my schedule, James, but, you know, I did it as a personal favor to you.
Yeah, for 2 weeks in a row you've been here on the line, as well as, so has Steve Wilkes.
Yes, I haven't left in a week.
And Andy Sparks.
I really need to go home. My dog's really hungry.
But your dedication to the cause is admirable and appreciated. Last week we did Berliner Weisses. What do we got on the plate this week, Mike?
So when I offered to send you some beers, because you were always so generous in sending me homebrews and commercial beers and beers from interviews you do and all sorts of things, I tried to come up with a couple sort of sets of beers. And this one I'm calling Weird Fermentations. So this is beers that, you know, those Berliner Weisses I have dialed in. So it leaves me free to do sort of more creative stuff with some of my other beers I'm still trying to figure out. So the first two beers we're going to start with are... I won't say lambics, I won't say gooses, I will say wild fermented pilsner and unmalted wheat, turbid mashed, inspired by lambic and goose. The people are very touchy sensitive on certain words. I personally, you know, if you're willing to say Kolsch and you're willing to say English pale ale and you're willing to say, you know, Oktoberfest, I see no problem with saying lambic or goose if you are carrying on the process and tradition that makes those beers so special. In Belgium, really, lambic and goose are not particularly protected terms. It really is the eau de. It's eau de goose, eau de lambic that are the really traditional examples. In a lot of ways, what May homebrewers are doing, if you're doing things right, you're actually making a much more authentic goose in Arkansas or in Washington, D.C., than a lot of the Belgian brewers who are maybe just blending in a little bit of spontaneously fermented lambic to their creek to say that it's lambic. And that's the only qualification for lambic or creek, is that there is some spontaneous fermentation in there. When you add Oda or VA, the French equivalent of that, you're saying that this is completely spontaneously fermented. It fits all the other sort of criteria of the style. But we won't. We will say American wild ales, perhaps, is what we're drinking here tonight. These are two very different beers. They're both about 2.5 or 3 years old. One of them, and Andy and Steve do not know which is which yet. One of them is with microbes I harvested in Washington, D.C. I set out a couple little pots of wort with cheesecloth over the top of them. One in my backyard. One in my basement next to my barrels. One in my living room. I grew those cultures up. When you hear lambic brewers, you know, they put in the cool ship and, you know, that's where the magic happens. Really, the magic is in the barrels. There's certainly some microbes landing in the hot wort, but really they're like seed savers. They have been curating these barrels. They have been throwing out the bad barrels. When they get a new barrel, they'll take a scoop of wort from one of their favorite barrels that's established and add it into there. So certainly they're getting some activity early on from the wild microbes that happen to fall in, but really it's those barrels is where the magic is. And as a home brewer, if you just leave your wort sitting open for 12 hours and then throw it into a bucket that's been cleaned and sanitized and doesn't have any resident microflora, it's a real spin of the wheel. And even when lambic brewers, you know, they have these barrels, these magic barrels that do great things, they're still throwing out some lambic. They're blending a lot of it. They have a huge library where they can go, well, this at a year, this isn't ready to go. I'll keep storing this, and it'll be ready in hopefully another year. Well, it's still not great now. Well, this would be – it's really sharp. It'll be a great component in my creek. You know, that they have a lot more options. So as a home brewer making these little starters, you can smell them. One of them had black mold, looked really terrible, smelled really terrible. I threw it away. The other two smelled pretty good, and so I ended up pitching those into the beer rather than pitching them into the sink.
Now, is there any danger of making something that would make you sick, or is it true that nothing in beer can hurt you, even though it might not taste very good?
You are correct. The caveat that is never sort of said after that line, no homebrew, no beer can make you sick, is if you pitch a healthy, active culture of brewer's yeast. You can get all sorts of nasty stuff just leaving wort out without brewer's yeast. The pH is higher. There's no alcohol to protect it. You can get E. coli. You can get salmonella. I would not suggest trying those starters, drinking them until they'd been there for, say, 3 or 4 weeks and they smelled pleasant, or if you wanted to take a pH reading of them and it was below, say, 4.5, something like that, or otherwise, I wouldn't mess with them. If you want to be extra careful, just like we were talking about in the last show about adding lactic acid to prevent lactobacillus from breaking down the head and protein, you can pre-add lactic acid or acid malt, or do sour wording or sour mash just to get that pH down a little bit before doing the spontaneous inoculation, mm-hmm. and you'll be safe then.
Could you feel safe if you took a gravity reading before you set them out and then a gravity reading afterward and saw a difference? In other words, you would assume that some fermentation had taken place. Could you feel safe at that point?
I would feel safer. What I did, I did not try those initial starters. I let them grow initially, and then I pitched a little of that into a new starter, a new larger starter. And then those smelled lemony and fresh and fruity and delicious, and that was enough for me. I would worry about just even the material that's in there, even if you've sort of killed the whatever's living in, floating in the wort, you might have stuff floating on top, you might have stuff on the walls of the fermenter. I would personally not be interested in drinking any of that. So I would sort of reculture it, try to strain out. If you've got a little strainer with some cheesecloth on it, get rid of any chunks of mold or chunks of junk. Start a bunch of them. I've actually got a couple going right now that have raspberries in them. You can use fruit. You can use, raspberries from my backyard, luckily. You can use air. You can use malt. You can use my friend Jeff Mello at Bootleg Biology. I floated the idea to him. And he said he was already working on culturing microbes from hops to see if there is anything living on there. We always sort of say, dry hopping's safe. There's got to be something living on there. I mean, come on. They're not, microbial, death zones. Maybe nothing that's going to spoil a 7% alcohol IPA, but getting off subject. So I got these. I got two good cultures going. I pitched them in there. I let them go for about a year. Young, it was fruity. It was vibrant. It was like a tropical Hefeweizen. It was a little clove, a little bit of mango papaya. And then as it aged, it got sort of more classically lambic-y, funky. The other one we have to try is the complete opposite. I use all microbes straight from Belgium. A good friend of mine, big lambic fan, was moving to Portland, Oregon to lighten his trip, to lighten the load. We all chipped in and we bought the 4 fundraiser seasonal beers from Armand de Driefonteinen. He did a spring, a summer, a fall, and a winter lambic. This is about 3 years ago. We opened those, and then people who had Driefonteinen, we broke open fruit beers and vintage beers and special releases and probably, I think, 12 bottles of Driefonteinen Goose and Lambic and Creek all put together. I picked my favorites. I brought a little jar of wort along with me. I pitched the dregs from my favorite ones in there, grew that up, and then pitched that. Normally, I'll do Y-yeast Lambic blend or Belgian ale yeast and dregs. In this case, it was 100% dregs directly from Belgium. It's a little bit tricky, what's living in a bottle after it's been in there for, a year, 2 years, 3 years, may not be the exact same microbes that were most responsible 3 or 4 years earlier for the fermentation. But you use a couple of bottles, some younger ones, some older ones, you get a variety of microbes in there. And it was sort of sulfury and gross for a while, sort of the opposite of the other one. The local one was delicious and fun young. This one was sulfur and baby dirty baby diapers. And I had some people over, I'll pull samples when people are over just to, show off the weird beers. And I got a bunch of God, no. From this one. But again, I think it's really turned a corner. We'll see if you guys agree or disagree.
I feel much better now.
Well, it kind of reminds me of the beer that I brewed with. I made a starter from just Orval dregs. And then I made the starter and on the stir plate, and it had activity, and then it went down, and then it had activity again, and then it went down. And so I pitched that into just 5 gallons of wort, and then I bottled it. I pretty much treated it like a regular beer, which I probably shouldn't have done. So I bottled it, a couple weeks later, And, you know, I got like feet.
I remember this. It was pretty
like,
wacky.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this tastes like feet.
Yeah.
But it's been in the bottle for, what, a couple, 3 years now. And now it's floral and you know, it's really tasty. I'll have to send you some of that.
That's often the key with sour beers. If it's not good, wait a while.
And it's not necessarily sour. It's just funky, you know.
Sorry, so, sour and funky beers.
Like I should be correcting you. But
I just wish that I don't have a great word for what those two things are together. There isn't, you know, mixed fermentation or wild beers or none of them quite suit the expanse from sour wort to Orval.
So let's say why don't we've got three glass cups, and then back behind you, Steve, is three in the bag, is right there. Pull us three plastic cups, and it's what I'll do is we can't do a guess without doing side by side.
That's true.
So, oh, definitely.
So where's my opener?
Right here.
I got the Basic Brewing opener.
It's not mine, honestly.
Okay. I'm trying. Don't peek. I'm trying to hide the cap. So we'll put this one. Let's put the first one in this in the glass.
Careful not to pour it all out.
Beer number one.
Beer. Number one.
James gets the cookie.
I'm monitoring the cookie situation. There we go. All right, that's one.
Okay.
It's a beautiful looking beer. Very effervescent. Does not have a lot of head retention.
I can smell it from here.
Now we can't. Unfortunately, it's a.
Just keep track of which one's which.
Well, based on your description, I expect we're going to be able to tell the difference. One is supposed to be lemony and...
But that was early on.
Right?
That was early on. They've changed.
Number two seems to have a bit more head retention than number one. Number one almost lost its head almost immediately.
I'll follow along at home. I've poured them as well, and I'm seeing the same thing on my glasses.
I'll show you what number one is.
I think he knows.
It's upside down, but okay. I got it anyway.
Wow.
Oh my.
Well, neither of them are offensive for sure. Mm. So
Ooh.
They're both. Mm. Kind of smell like, you mentioned this before, like sweet tart candies, but that's what I'm smelling kind of in the glass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sourness is a flavor, but for it, you can also smell compounds associated with it, I guess, is the best way to say it.
I'm also getting some kind of barnyardy stuff, you know, some kind of Brett off of number one.
Right. Yeah. I'm thinking number two has a little more complexity to me. Seems like it has a couple more layers.
And it seems a little more refined.
I agree. Number one is actually, to me, almost a little cheesier than I remember it being.
Number two seems more sour to me. What do you guys think?
Number one is almost flat. I think we've kind of came...
It's hard to tell, but is your number two as clear as number one, or is it cloudy? Mine appears cloudy, but it was the last one poured.
It's pretty clear.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's just me.
Yeah, so it's in a plastic cup, so it's hard to tell. But it does look pretty clear. I can see to the bottom, and I can see the bubbles in it. It is much more tart.
It's more tart.
Number two is.
Yes.
Yeah.
It seems to hold its head retention just a little better.
And it's more carbonated.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that affects if, you know, the level of carbonation kind of cleans the palate out, but number one seems a little heavier. Like there's a lot of mouthfeel going on in there, and it's pretty barnyardy.
Right. Well, so, the carbonation would certainly, you know, give it lighter mouthfeel, right?
Yeah.
More dry mouthfeel.
Yeah, the number one is more a bunch more funky to me.
That's funky. It's got boll weevils crawling all over it. They're going to get down in your yard and going to die.
No, it's not objectionable to
no.
me. I'd say it's like an Orval level of funky, probably. Maybe
you know, Orval make a pretty funky beers.
Yeah, they can.
I've done that trick a lot, and that's easy. You know, just put a little in the, you know, your bottling beers, and you get down to the last little bit.
Yeah,
and drink a bottle of Orval and put the dregs in the last couple bottles, right? And now you've got some cool funky beers.
Yeah, but Mike has a point. I guess if you get an old bottle of Orval, it's probably going to be a bit more funky than a younger one. But the number two. There's but that makes you pucker.
Well, I'm telling you, that's like Aunt B's pickles.
We'll be handing it out at the county line. Now it's got a little bit of, and I don't think it's because it's in a plastic cup, but there's a little bit of plasticky aroma to me, just a little bit.
Number two,
yeah.
Like a phenol or something.
Yeah, it's not overpowering, but and it could be because I've got the a little bit of the dregs too.
There's some pretty funky stuff going on here. Right?
This is crazy.
Mm. As it warms up, it's starting to. That's what I love about these beers is they kind of evolve as you drink them and they change. And
it's really good. Both of them.
Well, they're very personal too. I mean, what's very funky to one person, it may not be that funky to someone else, and what's super sour and off putting to someone might be, you know, not sour enough. I've got friends who I've literally served them homemade malt vinegar, and they said, "Well, it's, you know, it's sour, but it could be more sour."
You can knock that up a few points.
I saw a show on reality TV the other day about this guy that is about food addictions, weird food addictions. And this guy was addicted to vinegar, and he would order just straight vinegar, like, you know, can I have a wine glass of balsamic, please? And I'm thinking, well, I can't judge. So what do you guys think? Which one do you think is the almost pointed? But which one is out of the the yard in DC, and which one is out of the dregs?
Right.
In the
bottles? Which is pretty cool, right? So the dregs are from really great brewery, and several. You've got two or three examples of it. You actually pick the premier examples. You know, I'm gonna go with the number
Don't
one.
Don't overthink it.
I'm gonna go with the number one beer. Was probably. The was the DC beer, and then the number two beer was the dregs.
Now we can offer you this new car if you're sure of that answer.
You could trade that in.
Either way, I plan to do this myself. I have my little barrel, and my plan is to have some friends over and do the sour beers. Basically, we're going to put all the dregs that we like into the barrel.
Yeah.
I'm thinking number two is the
commercial dregs.
Is the commercial dregs.
Steve?
Well, I'm going to, just to play devil's advocate, I'm going to say that number two is the DC beer, and then number one is the commercial beer because it just overpowered it. And the DC beer, well, you know, it's all about fun in DC. So,
well, Andy's right.
Yeah, I figured. Well, I had to do that. Yeah,
that's right.
I will note that Steve is also sort of right. That the Trefontinen beer, rather than being chilled immediately, I didn't use my work chiller. I just stuck it down my barrel room. I left the top off for about 24 hours, and then I pitched the Trefontinen Star. So both of them probably have a little DC magic.
A little DC magic, yes. Columbus, they call it Columbus Circle.
Wow. But no, honestly, that the DC one is this bottle. I'm down. I think I have one bottle left after this. Was a lot funkier than it had been. That one is pushing, I think, more than almost probably 4 years since I brewed it.
Wow.
And that one has just gotten sort of funkier and funkier as time has gone on.
Wow.
And it hit a very good point, and now, to me, I think it's a little past that good point. It's very funky.
Yeah, it's pretty out there. But it would be good to have with a meal with some like crazy mushroom thing and, you know, a lot of woodsy flavors and be good. Mm-hmm. So
And these are also, I mean, again, blending is such a big part of them. Yeah. Those two blended together might be spot on. So this was, I started collecting the microbes in March 2011. And I brewed it April 2011.
So walk us through a little bit about how you harvest microbes. How do you, because my idea of it is you take a bucket of wort and you throw it out in the yard and you put a cloth over it and you're done. How do you really do it?
So, I mean, you can do a variety of ways. I mean, there are people who really streak out, you know, they have agar plates and they're really selecting a single colony. I'm not doing that. I'd rather have a wide variety of microbes in there. It's like your idea, but just on a smaller scale, starting with maybe two or three cups of wort in a variety of locations or all in the same location, because you're going to get different microbes if it's, you know, a bit upwind or a bit downwind or behind something or under a fruit tree or something like that.
Right.
You want to put cheesecloth or something over the top just to prevent, you don't want flies or bugs landing in there.
Sure.
They tend to have a lot of Acetobacter. So you can do that with air, or like in this case now, I've got a couple of raspberries that I've started pressure canning wort. So instead of, you know, having to make up fresh wort, I just have a whole bunch of 10, 20 wort ready to go for capturing weird microbes. And I just went out to the raspberry bush. For some reason, last week in D.C., we still have raspberries on our raspberry bush. And I split the 8 ounces of wort into two 12-ounce bottles. One of those got sort of two fresher-looking to underripe berries.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one got two sort of overripe, little squishy berries. And those are supposed to be, the studies have shown that you have a lot more Saccharomyces when you have damaged fruit, that tends to attract either it's insects or it's, you know, just happens to ensnare, you know, some dust going by with Saccharomyces. And so those are growing now, and I just started with 4 ounces. Just the less wort you start with, the less the microbes have to grow to sort of get going.
Sure.
And then you can step it up.
So
whether you're starting with air or you're starting with fruit or you're starting with something else, step them up, and then once you get to a good, healthy, active-looking culture, pitch away.
I love it. Yeah.
I used aged hops in both of these, but really, if you're pitching a sort of known culture, aged hops aren't a big deal. Aged hops are really, lambic brewers, the sort of reason they use them and whether they sort of knew this or not was that hops are real preservative against lactobacillus. If you have lactobacillus, really going actively in a spontaneous fermentation will drop the pH so quickly that the Saccharomyces, a lot of the other microbes, won't have a chance to sort of keep up. Lactobacillus, you know, making yogurt is terrific at 110, 120.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking, you know, mid-40s to 50 degrees Celsius. And that isn't what you want, but you also don't want to add 50 or 60 or 70 IBUs of Columbus because that's, you know, going to be harsh tasting, and the bitterness and the sourness aren't going to get along.
Right.
But good lambic has a little edge of bitterness to it. So, you know, a few ounces of aged hops if you're doing spontaneous. But with any of these techniques, just I aim for 5 or 10 IBUs of Howl or Tau or whatever I happen to have in the freezer. No reason to go and get aged hops if you don't happen to have a bag of aged hops sitting in your cellar like I do.
Well, and that brings me to the next question. So, tell me what aged hops are. So is it just hops that have sat around in your house forever and ever?
Or exactly. Is there
go ahead.
Yeah, two or 3 years open. I actually bought Fresh Hop Sells 2 or 3 year old Howler Tabs for about $1 an ounce that they're Willamettes, I think. And so you can buy pre-aged hops, and then I continued aging them. They're just sitting down there, bag sliced open, ready to go. Storing them warm is good. Storing them, you want them somewhere where they aren't going to get, you know, damp, you know, somewhere relatively dry. And they shouldn't smell off or old or cheesy. They just sort of should smell kind of bland, you know, like dried hay, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And people tend to dose them on amounts, so maybe 3 ounces, 4 ounces in 5 gallons. Allagash ran into some problems with their cool ship series where they were doing towards the high end, and they thought they were tracing a metallic flavor back to overhopping. So they backed down on it a little bit. And whether or not that was made, their hops just weren't aged as long as some of the Belgian breweries, or there was something else going on. But yeah, no, that's there have been some interesting studies around aging hops and getting some fruitier flavors out of the beer. But it was sort of accelerated aging at high temperatures for a month versus, you know, 3 or 4 year old, you know, aged out hops. So that, how much of the character really is from the aged hops, I would bet not much.
Does aging the hops, so if you use old hops, do they still maintain the same preservative value? It's the flavor value that changes?
Yeah, so the alpha acids will degenerate, but you'll also have beta acids oxidizing, which adds some bitterness, but you'll still have plenty of preservative value to them.
Interesting.
It may not be as much because the alpha acids are part of the preservative value of the hops,
yeah.
But they'll still be preservative enough to stop wild lactobacillus, which tends to be relatively hop sensitive. But again, I mean, this is really only if you're doing that classic, you know, taking the whole wort, leaving all of the wort out, you know, in a cool ship or in your brew kettle to yeah. cool down. In most cases, if you're pitching white yeast lambic blend, or if you're pitching ball dregs, or you're growing up a culture with, you know, from the air, from fruit, I wouldn't worry about it. If you're getting into brewing lambics, you know, talk to your homebrew shop, ask them if they've got any Saaz or Hallertau or something low alpha acid, Crystal or Tetnang or what, anything, you know, 3-4% alpha acid or lower. And say, hey, do you have any sitting around the freezer? You got any back there that, you know, is 2 or 3 years old already? Split that bag open, stick it in maybe a paper bag, something that, where it can breathe a little bit, where you're not going to have condensation. And then start brewing lambics now and start using the aged hops in a couple of years when they are, you know, smelling okay.
Sounds like a new revenue stream for you there, Andy.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You can market them. Yeah, you can mark up the old hops.
Yeah. Vintage hops.
No, but I would agree with you that most homebrew shops do have things that, you know, get old that it didn't sell well, and they probably will work for that. So,
yeah.
You know, you might as well ask. I know we end up at my store with the liquid yeast, you know. They're hard to always keep the freshest ones in stock, and sometimes they pass on date, and we have to sell them off. But, you know, they still work, right?
Yeah, and particularly if you're making a starter anyway, just, you know, maybe takes a little bit longer, and you might want to start with a little starter and step it up, but if somebody will cut you a deal on it, you've got, you know, you're not brewing tomorrow or something like that, go for it.
So people are sick of me talking about my fig, but
I know I am.
Last year at about this time, I took a fig and I boiled up, a 1,000 milliliters or a quart of extract wort and unhopped, and I cooled it down and I stuck a fig in it, you know, overnight. And then I put that wort in a stir plate or on a stir plate, and you know, it went for a while, and it seemed to show active fermentation. And it smelled pretty funky at first, and then it smelled kind of floral and nice. But the whole thing is, number one, I'm a procrastinator, and number two, I was kind of scared of the whole thing. So now I smelled it, and I just showed it to you there. I've got the Erlenmeyer flask there.
That's a lot of sediment.
There's a lot of stuff on the bottom there.
Yeah, there is.
Lots of yeast.
Do you think it's – I mean, I just smelled it, and it smelled kind of nasty again. So what are the prospects? I mean, and I've missed the last – you know, we've had our hard freeze already, so there's no more fresh figs out there.
Oh, no.
So
no, and there was a lot of figs on there.
I know. I'm heartbroken.
So do you think that I ought to just chunk that starter, or should I pitch those dregs into a gallon of wort and see what happens?
Yeah, so it's been sitting in the same flask for the last year.
Yeah.
So I mean, maybe you might just be smelling autolysis. You might just be smelling dead yeast. I mean, I reculture it and see, you know, see if anything grows and if it's not nasty smelling. I would say. I mean, there have been some really interesting, you know, reports of people getting relatively pure yeast cultures. I remember Charlie Papazian writing in one of his books that he had, you know, his house yeast culture and started getting funky, and he just sort of ended up, you know, maybe reculturing it a couple of times or just leaving it sitting for a while, and ended up getting a pretty pure culture out of it. I was just reading a guy who's going around to Scandinavian farmhouse breweries and sort of having the, you know, culturing their house yeast cultures. And despite the fact that they, you know, aren't pure culturing and aren't doing anything real fancy, he's finding cultures that have nothing but Saccharomyces in them.
Huh.
And so there's a chance that, you know, just sitting with that alcohol and with that low pH over the last year, maybe you killed off anything that's, you know, real weird, and now you're down to relatively, you know, acid, alcohol tolerant. It may or may not taste terrific, but I'd certainly say it's worth giving a shot.
I've rediscovered 1056.
Chico. You never know.
You never know.
Right. Well, but that's the whole thing about small batch brewing, is that what's it hurt to go ahead and try?
This is true. This is true. So should we finish out with the last? We've got one more beer here that I believe you said was brewed with red wine yeast. It's kind of it kind of doesn't fit with the lambics, but we've got it
it's
here.
It's a weird fermentation.
Okay, well there you go.
Or if you guys want to drink the dry hop lambic, you guys are welcome to do that instead.
Oh, well.
But either way, whatever you.
Yeah, let's do the dry hop lambic. It's over there. Be careful because it's full of hops.
Okay. Well, I'm going to let you do it.
Well, I'll let Andy do it. He's over there by the sink. Okay, so this thing is the commercial dregs beer, and it's actually got whole hop cones in the bottle.
Wow.
So number one, we're going to have to be careful opening it.
The person that made this didn't know how to filter their beer. They just stuffed hop cones right
had
in.
Coffee
the
in it.
It's easy. Some it's, amateur know, small, home small batch brewer? Brewing. Small batch brewing.
Very yeah.
So it's Amarillo and Simcoe. So it's a big classic American hops. It's been in the bottle for about 3 months now.
3 months.
So this is also I was just reading in BYO today someone else saying that if you leave a beer sitting on hops too long, you get grassy flavors. I've particularly with whole hops have never found that to be the case. The problem with hops in the bottle though is that you end up with nucleation sites. Think Mentos and Diet Coke. So almost certainly you will have some.
I've got
foaming.
Hops in my glass.
Did it try?
Yes, it came out of the bottle.
Oh, if I only had a nickel for every time I've said
oh
that.
Oh, my God, but it smells heavenly.
Speaking of nucleation
sites.
So
normally what I do is I have a little tea strainer. I'll put that over a large glass. Sorry, I'll pour through that, and then I'll dose out to smaller glasses.
Wonderful, though.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, my. Oh,
completely changes the perception of the beer.
Remember when we dry hopped that that white wine, Steve?
Yes.
Did you like it this much?
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. This is
pretty
really
amazing.
Good.
So this is I think it was but just two really cones of each. Tart. You know, I opened up my package. And I sort of sifted through them a little bit to find some relatively intact cones, and I put them in. Two cones of Amarillo, two cones of Simcoe in 4 or 5 bottles, maybe a 6-pack. To me, it's always a fun thing to do with a sour beer. No extra effort. You know, just put the beer in there, carbonate it up. And then those ones, because they have those dry hops in their cover-up, maybe some of the weirder flavors you get in a young sour beer. And, I mean, citrus and sour are just such a natural combination.
Yeah, that takes me back to the Berliner Weisses.
Yeah.
Lemony. Sour.
Sort of cuts through the funk.
Yeah. I don't get much of the funk anymore.
Mm-mm.
It's all about.
It's just got all those big citrus pine things going. Wow. It's really good.
This one is really inspired. New Belgium does Le Terroir, which is Amarillo and Citra in their pale sour base beer. Another mind-bending, you know, real revelation kind of beer that really, the first time I had that, I was like, why IPAs are popular, sour beers are popular, why isn't every brewery that does sour beers doing this? And it's just, it's so easy, it's so fun, great way to do a cask or to do some bottles.
That is one of the nicest beers I've ever had.
Wow.
I really like that a lot.
It's chunky.
Well, you gotta filter it through your teeth, yeah. But that's okay.
You need a picture of it like that, right? Where you can see it.
A chunky beer.
Wow.
Yeah, because you can actually see the stem where the, and you can almost see the lupulin gland stuck to some of the leaves. It looks like.
Amazing. It's a real experience to drink it.
That's a crazy trip to Flavor Town.
The beer seems to have a little more body almost.
Yeah, I think it...
Maybe it's because I'm trying to filter the stuff with my teeth.
It knocks out some of the carbonation, too, so it's going to be lower carbonation. But to me, it's not grassy. I mean, it really has these interesting... Bread is an amazingly interesting microbe, and it can take compounds, glycosides from hops. And so glycoside is just an aroma molecule bounded to a sugar. And we'll take that sugar off to ferment it, freeing this delicious, awesome flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you add hops to Brett beers and give it a little bit of time, you can really get new, interesting flavors rather than sticking your nose in a hop bag. That sort of raw hop aroma you sort of get in an IPA. This has, to me, more of those sort of varietal, more of the citrus, more of the fruit, and less of the green, grassy, chlorophyll kind of flavors.
I'm almost
despite sitting on the hops for 3 months.
I'm getting kind of a pineapple thing going on.
That's classic Brett. I mean, Modern Times have done a couple 100% Brett IPAs, and the first one, people complained it was 100% Brett. There's no Brett character, but it tasted like pineapples. And it was really the Brett and not, the Centennial and the Chinook and the Amarillo.
I think you shared some of those with us. I think we did some 100% Brett beers from you.
Yeah, those are delicious.
And, very well may have.
And I think we were just shocked at how unfunky they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
And luckily, Gordon Strong helped me write. There's a new American Brett beers category coming up in BJCP, and I got my 2 cents on that. And it was, don't say it needs to be funky. Don't say it needs to be anything but delicious.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wow. And that is, the sourness, and the fruitiness, and the boy, that's just that's something else.
That pushes a lot of buttons. That's a good beer. That's just tremendous.
I'm a big fan of dry hopping in kegs, too, for the same reason that it keeps getting, you keep extracting hoppy flavors, particularly with whole hops. It doesn't get grassy. It doesn't get weird. It just makes the beer that lasts a little bit longer in the keg.
I think this inspires me to do another sour wort beer, another Berliner Weiss, and then after fermentation, dry hop it.
Definitely.
With some big American hops.
And I would say we might want to warn folks, don't use pellet hops in this.
No. Bad idea.
Well, when you're doing it in the bottle.
That's what I mean. That
would really be a mess.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
But you could get, it might not be as fresh if you were to dry hop in the secondary, but you could still get some good results.
Oh, definitely.
And it would be a cleaner presentation. Because this is
particularly Brett is a terrific antioxidant too. I mean, a dry hopped sour beer will last a lot longer than an IPA or something like that, and even that beer tastes a lot fresher even at 3 or 4 months than if you just had a regular IPA that was 4 months old sitting warm in a bottle like that one's been. It's not going to taste fresh and vibrant and fruity. It's going to taste old and herbal and meh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that, what blew me away was how fresh and vibrant it was. It was like I was pulling it off a bright tank, It's just like, wow.
Yeah. Wow.
No, and those are the fun things with sour beers. Sour beers still surprise you. I mean, I love clean beers. I love, sort of those classic flavors. But after you brew for 8, 9, 10 years, you figure out what beers are supposed to taste like.
Yep.
Unless you're adding something weird, you sort of, this Oktoberfest about what it's going to taste like. Maybe it's a little more malty or maybe it's a little drier, but you sort of know that palate. With sour beers, there's still all these exciting flavors waiting to be found, these microbes living on figs or on raspberries or in your backyard, that the interplay and figuring out which strains work well with hops and which strains work well in dark sour beers and which ones you want to throw to the wolves because they make a dirty diaper flavor. That to me is what's exciting about sour beers. That's why I keep coming back to them, no matter how many times I've had a great sour beer.
Wow. Well, this has been an honor and a privilege, I would say.
Indeed,
as always.
And I'm happy to hear of your success that you're having with your book. I had no doubt. And it's wonderful that that you're translating all the hard work that you've done on the blog over these years, into something more sort of traditional and more permanent feeling, more traditional media. But wow, maybe it's because I've sampled, 8 beers, but, we've had this relationship, we 4 guys have stood, in this space several times, and it just doesn't get any less fun, and it doesn't get any less educational. And,
that's for sure.
I'm really grateful.
And to be serious for a second, I was on Basic Brewing Radio before I was the Mad Fermentationist. Without Basic Brewing Radio, there would be no Mad Fermentationist. There would be no American Sour Beers. You really gave me that kick to be, to go, oh, people are interested in this. I should start putting this out there in whatever clunky fashion I was in 2006 or whatever that was. Wow. And it's come a long way since then. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Okay, I'm going to cry. Or I'll drink some more beer.
Yeah, that too.
You guys still have a couple bottles of my stuff. Enjoy it in the after show.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mike. Sure.
Indeed.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Pleasure, guys.
Thanks Steve. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to Mike and Steve and Andy. Very kind of Mike to say that at the end. I value our relationship. He's a nice guy. He's a nice guy in addition to being a really good brewer. I mean, I always look forward to what he's got to share with us. If you haven't bought his book, American Sour Beers, Innovative Techniques for Mixed Fermentations, you need to get it. It takes what can be a confusing topic and makes it really easy to understand. At least it did for me. So if you're a fan of his blog, Mad Fermentationist, pick up his book. And as a footnote, I finally did pitch the dregs from that Figstarter experiment a couple days ago into a small batch of wort. Something is happening, but I'm not sure what it is. I don't know if it's good or bad, so stay tuned for updates on that. Remember, we're taking next week off, but we will be back in December. And I hope you have a great time with loved ones in the meantime. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link, where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping to All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. And for a limited time this holiday season, check out our Jumbo Combo with all of our DVDs, our bottle opener, and our Brewer's Logbook at one special low price. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. And thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link, especially during this busy, busy holiday season. We greatly appreciate the support. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Nikon Coolpix L830 16 megapixel CMOS digital camera with 34x zoom Nikkor lens and full 1080p HD video. And Sea Monkey Original Instant Life. Sea monkeys are still around. By the way, that was listed under office products. So no office is complete without a stapler and some sea monkeys. There you go. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com as well. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is brought by Kelly Dodds. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.